up, everybody? Hello and welcome to this week's episode of 90s Court. I'm one of your hosts, Lisa.
I'm Andy.
Guess what? We're your hosts and we're here to do the show. If you have never listened to the show before, welcome. You are a little late.
What show class. Is it?
What show is this? This is another true crime podcast under the guise of a sweet, sweet 90s. Yeah, no, it's we take two popular things from the 90s, we discuss them in earnest-ish, and then prior to our break, we take two less popular things from the 90s and discuss those just kind of willy-nilly, because that's the name of our game. So that's Let's 90s see. Court. How are you, Andy?
Googling in earnest, meaning, I mean, I've heard it a million times, so I'm just Googling. Occurring to a greater extent or more intensely than before, sincere and serious in behavior. Yeah, you're right. That was more or less. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Everything's honestly, like, if everybody could just glean something from me, is that generally speaking, aside from having the occasional fear and anxiety of the occasional thing of like, I wonder how things are going to work out, pretty much everything's really rad, gang. Like, really rad. Everything's very good.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
I didn't know if you asked me how I was doing. I like lost track of things while I was looking up the inner sternest definition. So I was I hope this is what she asked. So
I don't know. There's some full moon energy on the show tonight. You feel it? I feel it.
There is.
I feel it.
Lisa, what about you? How are you doing with your full moon energy?
I got my roof replaced this week, which was awful.
Super dope. Oh, nope.
No, it was so bad. It was really... Are you there?
Yeah, was it just like, hey, where's my roof go?
I'm sorry. I thought you got disconnected. It was just so loud for like 3 days straight. And then there was also a downpour in the middle. I was just like, there goes my house. I was like, there goes my house. Because that's, you know, Texas summer so far has been really weird. But yeah, man, I'm good. I'm alive and I'm well. And I'm ready to podcast, baby.
Hell yeah. Speaking of podcasts. The thing we're doing, I'm gonna tell people about our Patreon members and how great they are.
They're so great.
First and foremost, I have to say thank you to our newest executioner.
Yo,
Michael, what is up? Our boy Michael, who has been a bailiff, like he's like seeing over the court for quite some time, and he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna get a gun. And so instead of David last week got his law degree, but Michael just brought a gun into the courtroom and was like, I'm gonna start issuing out decisions. So
yeah,
so thank you so much for upgrading. That means it, if you want to, as it says on Executioner, you can be on an episode of 90s Court. We'll have to discuss that because we haven't yet, because I just found out about this yesterday when I saw you'd upgraded. So thank you.
Woo!
I would love
to have one of you guys actually sign on to be on the show. Like, it would be, I don't know how we would, we like logistically, we've never talked about how to do that, but it would be so dope to figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. And plus it's like, it takes so much pressure off of you because you're like, that's one other person to say words. So like, I don't just have to say every dumb bullshit that occurs to me. So.
I love saying every dumb bullshit that occurs to me. I don't know about you, but I personally love it. Sure. So
also thank you to our amazing judges who are also multiplying. We got Judge Troy, of course, the immortal, the eternal. And then, of course, our newest judge, Judge David, got his law degree, immediately promoted to judge. Thank you so much. You're amazing. And Judge Gabriel, you're beautiful. We love you. And thank you so
beautiful.
Much for the amazing court case last week as well. You're all pretty. And, of course, our bailiffs. Our ride or dies, our fucking home skillets, our bailiffs, Tim, Preston, Nate, Alyssa, Evelyn, and Jake. Woo. You guys, y'all, I just can't, like, I can't say enough about how much we love you guys that when I was looking at the Patreon, I'm like, we really need to give you guys some more content. So we're going to do that this week.
Yes.
So, and I'm going to say that, put that energy out there, because every time I do that, then I feel bad and guilty if I don't. So we're definitely going to do it 100%. And if we don't, message me and say, Andy, you said you were going to do it. And then I'll be like, I'm sorry, I messed up.
July is just crazy.
It's been crazy. It's almost, it's been like starting a business crazy. And then,
kind of, yeah.
And of course, who can forget our wonderful juror, Samantha. Samantha, thank you so much. We love having, honestly, more than anything, what I love right now is having one person in every category of thing right now. For the first time ever, we have all four categories represented at the same time. So thank you.
That feels good.
Yeah, I know. Just bing, bong, bong, bonk. There's one more bonk.
Yes.
Yeah. So honestly, I can tell you this much. I really didn't think through the fact that I was going to say all of these words, and then the segue was going to be directly into my thing.
Do you want me to go first instead? No,
because you're going to do a court case first. I'm fine with it because my thing's kind of, it's not dumb. It's awesome, but it's a little bit weird. It's kind of a weird premise because I'm not talking about what you think I'm talking about. So.
Okay. Okay.
Take a moment to chill. All right. Oh, hey, everybody. How's it going? It's Andy.
Oh, hey.
One of your co-hosts of this show. I'm here to talk to you about a film, but not a film.
Mm.
And when is a film not a film? Well, the film is a film, but I'm not talking about the film. I'm talking about an event surrounding this film, a groundbreaking event that was so incredible that it was repeated over and over and over again because commercialization.
Okay.
So, we will probably talk about this film later, so I'm not going to talk about that. I want to talk about the event, which, and let's say it's the 90s, all right? Let's say it's the late 90s. It's getting, you're maybe 13, 14 years old, and you've always been a pretty good fan of a movie series that came out in the 70s and 80s, very early 80s and late 70s. It's wildly popular movie series, very inspirational. It's in, like, one of them is in the top AFI's top 100 films. It's just an amazing thing, especially if you're a nerd and just, you've always loved this series. You've got the toys, you've got t-shirts that say them. It's just this super commercialized thing. There's games, paraphernalia, everything.
Okay.
And then that series is like, oh, hey, by the way, I don't know if you remember this. We literally built in the ability for there to be prequels. Because the first films were episodes 4, 5, and 6. And some people already guessed before I even got to this. But, and even before this, like in 97, this film series decided, hey, we're going to re-release all of the original films into theaters with some cut scenes and all digitally remastered. So building even more hype to the fact that in 1999... they released a prequel to a film 16 years after the original trilogy. That, of course, was Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Now, as I said before, I am not covering the film. I'm covering an event. And this event was that in 1999, because of the tremendous hype, because of the fact that people have been obsessed with this film series since 1983, when the first one ended, the last one ended with Return of the Jedi, they were like, everybody wanted to see this film, and so they're like, you know what, we're gonna let people see the film just a little bit earlier than normal.
Okay.
But technically, it's almost like they're like acting like we have to obey the rules, even though they make the rules. They're like, technically it's Friday. And we're like, you could make it any day you want. And they're like, no, it's got to be Friday.
Yeah.
So that is how we came upon the first of many to come. And some people might say, well, what about technically there was this thing that came out in 1967? You know what I'm talking about. It was the introduction of this whole phenomenon of midnight movies. The big drop of a big blockbuster film that everybody's obsessed with, going at midnight and seeing it that night. And this was the first one. And I'm going to tell you
that was the first one.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It was the first in the
series
of people doing that, at least as far as having like these big monumental midnight showings. And so, so for those of you who are familiar or were fans at the time, you know, basically, these were such that you had to wait in line the day that the tickets came available, 4 hours. There were people camped out on the street, like camped out outside of theaters, because obviously we're in a little bit of a smaller community, but in bigger cities, I can't even imagine how many people were camped out for days.
Yeah.
And I mention this because, in particular for me, who was 13 going on 14 at this point, because it happened in May of 1999, I had my mom quoted in the newspaper because I was in school, of course, the week before it came out, and that's when they released tickets for sale. And so my mom is in line at the movie theater, like, waiting to get tickets in this, and she's just like, this is the dumbest shit ever. Like, I mean, my mom wouldn't say that, but basically, like, then the newspaper, like, is, like, walking down and, like, interviewing people or whatever, and my mom basically apparently just, like, interjecting, just like, you think I'm crazy? And then just explained to them that she was waiting in line for her kids or whatever, and so they, like, quoted her in the paper.
That's a good mama right there.
Yeah. So thanks, Mom. You're the best. So she waited for hours in this line, just for the opportunity to get us tickets. And that's the thing, is it was such an unusual thing, because, like, normally, like, that's not something that happens, like, it's on, like, that kind of a stuff. But that was one where I, like, you know, I was getting a little bit older. I was in my early teens or whatever. And it's like, Star Wars is a nice, wholesome movie film. So we'll let him go to, I mean, people do get shot with blasters and stabbed with swords, like laser swords all the time, but, you know, good, wholesome family stuff. Everything about it. I mean, you know, and then the actual day of the film, everybody's wearing costume. I mean, it was unbelievable. Just the amount of energy surrounding this thing. Like, and of course, every seat is sold. You know, everybody's in the seats too. It's not a situation where they're sold and, like, maybe some people skipped out. No, they went to the movie because this was not like, oh, it's the internet days where, like, everybody's mad about spoilers. Like, nobody wanted to get it spoiled. And so, like, everybody who wanted to do it wanted to be the first ones to see it. They wanted to line up in there. Now, some people might say in retrospect that was a mistake. and you know what? We'll leave that up to debate, because now suddenly, at least from my understanding, is now people are, like, turning the corner and being like, the prequels were great. And I'm like, well, that's a weird take to
that's
have.
That's revisionist history.
Yeah, that's revisionist history. I mean, we can watch the movies. They exist still. Like, it's not something where you had to be there. Like, it's still, they're here. So I was looking up information on this, because it was interesting just kind of reading some of the stuff that was happening at the time. Because, I mean, I was experiencing it, but also the stuff's happening in the periphery. Mm-hmm. So teaser trailer for this was huge. Like, the fact that just, like, people knew there was a new Star Wars coming out, and so everybody wanted to see this teaser trailer. So they released it for the first time in the movie Meet Joe Black, which was a film that came out in November of 1998.
Yes, I remember. I saw Meet Joe Black in theaters for some reason.
Wow,
yes.
That's so random.
That's not okay.
So I clicked on the link because I was like, I've heard of this film, but I have no idea what it's about. And holy shit, I was like, I was expecting it to be some kind of weird comedy or something. Nope, it's a Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins film.
Yes.
Where Brad Pitt
is a wild ride.
Brad Pitt plays death and comes for Anthony Hopkins, but then they make a deal where Hopkins gets some extra days of life, and Brad Pitt gets to be a human for a few days, but twist, Brad Pitt falls in love. So anyways, that happened, and oops. I do need to watch this movie now. Just because I want to see, just because that premise is just fucking wild. That was a whole lot of tangent, but the reason I told all that was because of the fact that there was the trailer in there, there were a shitload of people that went to see Meet Joe Black literally just to see the trailer for this. So people were going, like, the day it opened to see this
movie. Just
because they wanted to see the trailer in theaters. But then the next, which is funny because then the next day after that, the trailer was leaked online. Whoops.
Oh.
Because it's a bootleg, and because, like, that was, like, the internet, like, there was no, I mean, not that there's, like, a lot of control over the internet now, but there was no control back then. Like, just, like, if it's on there, it's on there. So the company is just like, all right, fuck it. Well, I guess we'll just put the actual trailer on the website. So all these people would pay a ticket, and then, like, the next day it was just up on their website. But they put it on the website for The Phantom Menace, and within literally, like, an hour, the website crashed because so many people went on the website to watch this fucking thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Obviously, they got it back up and running, but it was just, it's to get an idea of the scale and immensity of how big, because, I mean, it's just, like, there's so many more things, like, on the internet and stuff to be, like, interested in and stuff that, like, everybody's attention for this period of time was just solely focused on, like, one thing. Not everybody, obviously, but, like, a larger portion, it feels like, of people than even today. And especially with now, like, you know, with even, like, the Avengers movies, they're like, We have more theaters now. There's more theaters in the actual movie theaters. You can see them more times. You can literally see it on Thursday, like, you know, where they just kind of are like, ah, fuck it. Just get rid of the Friday rule entirely.
Right.
It was estimated that about 2.2 million full-time employees missed work that day to see the movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And several
companies. I will never understand this.
Yeah, and several companies even closed. I'm guessing small companies, because I cannot imagine. It's like, IBM closes its doors for Star Wars.
Yeah.
IBM, that was such a random pull. But, yeah, I guess that's for nerds. So there might be some nerds that work there. So, Lucasfilms agreed to allow advanced ticket sales, but not until May 12th. So it was like they didn't want to do it like super early, because then they're like, okay, well, people are just going to be snatching this. We want like everyday watchers to be able to watch it too, which I'm glad they did that, because despite the fact that my mother did have to wait in a very long line, I'm glad that I was able to see it despite not being obviously like my age now, like who is like sitting there clicking the refresh button waiting for a new thing to buy it and add it to cart.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that, they're like, we'll do advanced ticket sales, but we're only going to allow 12 per person.
12 per person?
Yeah.
That's so high.
It's such a large number. It's like, it feels like they did that because they're like, well, you know, in case like a family wants to go. And I'm like, I mean, listen, I'm not saying there's not 12 person families, but like, you just got to just have two people go if you're going to have your 12-person family go.
You can't reserve a ticket for the 3-month-old up to like the 4. Oh my gosh.
So anyways,
12 limit. Yeah.
So needless to say, there was a lot of scalping, because people were like, hey, do the three of you guys want to come with me and we'll each get 12 tickets and we can sell 44 of them?
I cannot believe this.
So, yeah. So, and then people were selling tickets for as high as $100 a piece, which at the time, I don't know. I don't remember how much tickets cost, but I'm almost certain that they were cheaper than they are today. So,
yeah.
And just as a note, just as a side note, because this is still wild to me, the movie then came out onto VHS April of 2000, which from May of 1999 to April of 2000, that's almost a year. And I still just think it's wild of anything taking a year to come out. Like, I remember that's how it worked, but it just seems so crazy because people would, things would be in theaters for so fucking long, and then they would usually be in that gray zone where they're like, if you're like staying at a hotel, you can watch it like on pay-per-view. Like, because there's that time where it's between when it exits theaters and it enters VHS, where it's like, you can get it here, and it's that was the only place I would ever see it anyways, was that all of a sudden, like, oh, that's the thing that's I can't see anywhere else, so I'm gonna watch it in this movie or this hotel room, at least when I was a kid.
Yes.
So
yeah, why did movies enter this weird purgatory period?
I know, there's just like this weird because they're like, well, we have some other dumb people that will pay a bunch of money for our things, so we'll do that.
Oh my gosh.
I have to assume it was more than just hotels, but that's the only people I can think of. So anyways, not Star Wars Episode One, but Star Wars Episode One midnight release and hype.
I don't think I've ever gone to a midnight release of a movie. Never.
I also went to Star Wars Episode 7.
Which one was that one?
That was the Force Awakens. It was the one that came out in like 2015, at the end of the year, like Christmas 2015.
I asked like I know and
like if you ask a question that you'll get more information, they're like, "Oh, now I know."
No, I get it. And so to the listeners who probably heard a lot of like, I've never seen Star Wars. I've never seen anything Star Wars. At this point, I'm not going to. Now it's just interesting to not at this point.
That's
but
fine.
It's been, no, but it's been very interesting to be like, I'm part of like these Discord communities, and I get nailed to the wall all the time for not having seen Star Wars. I'm like,
It's funny that like that you could just as easily get nailed to the wall just for being a casual viewer that's like, oh, I like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like them quiz, and it's like, you're gonna get nailed either way, so just don't worry about it. I mean, like, honestly, at this point, I'm like, I love the films, I love the whole series, but like, it's a hard watch to go back to episode 4 and be like, I'm gonna start with this in 2021 and just be like, I'm gonna hopefully sit through this and hope it lives up to the hype of everything ever from everyone.
Exactly. Wow.
Anyways. Ooh,
well, Lisa? I wonder how many other listeners actually made it to that as well. But
yeah,
listen,
I'd love to hear that. That'd be great.
Yeah. So my thing is, in the 90s, like most girls, I was obsessed with Barbie. Okay. She was the backbone. She was my best friend, the backbone of my social circle. She was my therapist. She was my muse. And she made a lot of advancements in the 90s. Like I talked about Gymnast Barbie, which was like the most groundbreaking thing in the world to me. But in 1992, we got a very particular version of Barbie that stays with me to this day. And that is Totally Hair Barbie.
I'm sorry, what?
You've got the longest hair ever. Totally hot, totally cool. Totally Hair Barbie.
Totally Hair Barbie, Andy.
Add some depth, gel it, scrunch it. Now you said, make it fun, make it now. Hair so long, it's totally wild.
I'm going to stop because this is a really long commercial, but like, Totally Hair Barbie.
That's yeah, what I'm we looking were going. At I'm yeah. looking at things. Wow.
She had hair down to her toes, as claimed in the commercial, which I did not finish getting to. If you suspect just by listening and not Googling as a listener right now that you had this Barbie, let me describe her to you because you definitely had this Barbie. She had toe-length hair, and it was crimped to the heavens. Just crimped to the heavens.
Yep.
and she had the closer to God bangs. Like there was a style in the 90s where girls' bangs were just puffy and big. And that's what this Barbie doll had. And she came with like little tubes of gel. They said Depp, which is a brand of gel from the 90s that I vaguely remember. That's a really buried memory for me. And D-E-P? She was dressed. DEP, yeah.
Okay.
And she was dressed in this like hot pink / purple / green / blue, like skin tight mini dress, which she wore with like giant pink earrings. So I'm not gonna lie, if I saw this whole setup on like this rig out on a person out in downtown Austin, I'd be like, yeah, boy. I'd be like, you're my number one right there. I think I even saw that there was a Totally Hair Barbie Halloween costume. And I was like, oh my gosh, the fact that I don't have that pisses me off. But
it's the biggest extensions ever.
There was nothing else for Barbie than, you know, aside from being completely disproportionate, you know, body size wise, to just have hair down to her fucking feet. Okay. And I'm fairly certain that I got a Totally Hair Barbie for my 7th birthday, which I'm pretty sure took place at a Pizza Hut, which I will talk about one day. That is a fantastic memory. She came with some hair accessories as well, which I don't even remember because as a Barbie owner and a child.
God.
What are you oh my godding about?
Nothing. Just I saw the – I'm just looking at the ones with the Depp bottle in there. I mean because I
– The Depp bottle.
I pulled up Depp and I was like, holy shit, I think I had some of this at some point in my life.
Yeah,
but
you did.
But
– I think we all did.
Also, I pulled up one of these that was like, here's popular canon Barbie Totally Hair Dolls. And it had $22 crossed out, and then it had $269 written next to it. And I'm like, why would you even let us know the original price? I'm sorry, that's a complete segue. It has nothing to do with this, but somebody just did really bad advertising for their product. All right, carry on.
Yeah, that's not the way. That's not the way, guys. That's not the way that works. So, like I said, the hair accessories did not last. I think there was like some kind of hair wrap, maybe some scrunchies or something. Those were gone instantly because you were a child and nothing ever stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about the commercial, going back and having watched it for the first time today in probably 30 years, was just being like how fucked up were the hairstyles in the 90s? Boys and girls, male, female, everyone. Your hair was fucked up in the 90s.
Yeah,
not that it's great right now.
We're still holding on to some of the 80s stuff, it seems like, on some of these pictures I'm looking here, too. A lot of 80s hairstyles.
Yes,
here too.
Yes. The 92, I mean, it's just the fact that crimped-ass hair Barbie down with the hair down to her feet was the selling point. It was like, this is suspect, but it's 92, so we're very young and naive at this point. So they're puffing Barbie's bangs so hard in the commercial that she looks like a fucking poodle person. And like, according to Wikipedia, this is interesting, this was also the highest selling Barbie doll in history, which would explain why every girl I knew had one,
it's
including myself.
Inside. Okay.
Everyone's
oh, you're
so
gonna
broken.
Say that. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. They were apparently more than 10 million sold worldwide of this Barbie.
I guess you're getting your money's worth on the hair. If you're just like,
that
I
is
need.
A lot. That is a lot of crimped hair. In landfills,
and that's
like,
and that's
so
also
much.
It's also just like the name. Like I feel like we've skipped to the product when the first part was just like Totally Hair. I'm like, that's nothing. What it? That means nothing.
She has hair, Barbie. That's our.
Non-bald Barbie.
She has arms. Slightly
totally arms.
Longer.
Just like totally fucking like huge long Baraka arms. I'm sorry, Baraka is a weird pull that you probably don't get, but that's okay.
No, but yeah, totally arms Barbie is my new band name. And don't forget that in the commercial, I didn't get that far. You have not one, but two amazing options for totally hair Barbie, brunette or blonde. This is also the first time I read that in 20 years that they had made a brunette Barbie. It's like, okay, that is crazy.
Where's brunette Barbie? Let me see. Where are you at? Oh, hey, look at you, brunette Barbie. Yeah. Jesus.
And that, I think I remember seeing somehow the brunette
one. Somehow it looks wilder with the brunette hair that long all the way down to her legs. I don't know
why. It does. You know what? I don't know why either, but I am with you on that. I'm 100% with you on that one. I even remember seeing both in the store and being like, even as a brunette, being like, ew, why would I ever want the brunette Barbie?
It gets down to the bottom and it's like clustering up and it's just like, that's just like a whole like monster down there. Like it's like the other one looks like, okay. Oh, that's just a bad hairstyle. This one just looks fucking wild.
It's so apparently you can get them new in box now on eBay for like 160. I didn't see anything as high as 229, but I wouldn't doubt that, especially if it were brand new in box. But man, I really like, a part of me wants to buy a brand new totally hair Barbie, because if it still has the unopened depth gel, I really want to open it up and see what it smells like. Like what does 30 year old gel smell like?
Is that actual gel? I thought it was just like a prop.
No, it was real gel, man.
Holy shit.
To put into your Barbie's hair. And you could like crunch your own hair too.
Imagine being Depp and being like, we made the best marketing decision of our life getting on this fucking totally hair Barbie.
Exactly. People 30 years in the future will be on a radio show on the internet with we don't know exists yet. Talking about our chill. Well, here we are. We've come full circle, lads. But that's totally hair Barbie. You had her. You absolutely had her. If you didn't, I had enough for both of us. And there you go. Totally hair Barbie.
You had mine. So thank you.
I had yours.
Totally hair. Totally hair. Totally hair. Totally hair.
It's too much hair.
That was the end of the song. Anyways.
That was the best.
Wow. I'm speechless on a lot of these things, and it's just, I didn't have any sisters, and I wasn't, many, like, people that just had Barbies at all, so, like, I have, like, no interactions with, like, any of these, and so when I see them, I'm just like, these were the good ones, huh?
Yeah, there were so many cool, quote-unquote, hard-quote, cool Barbies in the 90s, mm-hmm. but this one just stuck out because of that dress and that hair, man. Those two things combined were just like, lady, what is
wowzers.
You doing?
Wowzers.
Anyway, we have an insane court case. I don't know if insane is a word, but we have a court case coming up, and we're going to take a break, back with poll results. Yeah, poll results from last week, and then we'll get on that court case. So we'll see you after the break.
All right, see ya.
Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90scourt. Sweet dreams.
Believe it or not, we're back.
We did it.
I know you looked at the episode thing and saw, I see that the episode continues from here. I wonder if it will be them coming back or just leaving. And we're back. So you're welcome.
We did it. We're always here. We did. We have nothing better to do on Sundays, guys. So
Yep.
Yeah.
So, hey, we got some poll results for you. I know that's what you guys are all here for. So last week we discussed Pop-Tart Minis versus Doritos 3D, our wonderful case by Judge Gabriel. So thank you so much for that. And it went, I would say probably, it sounded like Judge Gabriel probably expected this too. Honestly, it wasn't as brutal as I was expecting. So let me just go over the results rather than saying more words. Facebook... 63.9% to 36.1% Doritos 3D.
Damn.
So, not great. I mean, it's not as brutal as a lot of things, especially the fact that, like, Pop-Tart Minis, I'm like, you just, a lot of people probably just don't like Doritos 3D, because Pop-Tart Minis is kind of a random thing to be really excited about. So anyways, those are some weird numbers. And then Twitter said, oh, hold on, I've got numbers for you, too. 63.9% to 36.1% Doritos 3D. And if you think those numbers sound familiar, it's because they are literally the exact same numbers as the Facebook polls, which is just for me,
odd.
Such weird numbers. Like not 64-36, no, 63.9 to 36.1 exactly for both of them. Anyways, and then lastly, similar, very similar, Instagram, 66% to 34%. A little bit more traditional numbies. So numbies. So, anyways, Doritos 3D comes out victorious. But I enjoyed that one. I always enjoy, I think we always comment that we love the food ones. Those are the most fun because, like, we come in, we have, like, no notes because there's just no information on them. And we're just like, here comes some horse shit.
Yes, every time. But it's so fun because we get to be experimental.
I know. And because we're not belabored with facts.
Yes. Speaking of belabored with facts, we've got movies.
Yeah, well, I was going to, yeah. Anyways, speaking of the thing Lisa said, something just came across my desk.
Full moon energy.
As I rip my shirt Optimus. Off and turn into a werewolf. So anyway, so we've got some movies. Can't Hardly Wait versus She's All That.
I'm so sorry for this suggestion.
some of my favorite films that I was like, I'm so glad we get to cover these because it's been so long. I've been waiting, and I just appreciate the fact that Lisa respects me enough to finally let me have these. So I'm a courteous host, though, and was like, you know what? I don't want to be all pushy and be like, hey, I love this case. I need to do this case. And go first. So I was like, I'll let Lisa go first. So Lisa's going to talk about Can't Hardly Wait.
I can't hardly wait to talk about this court case. Can't hold my breath about how excited I am. Listen, this was my suggestion to Andy. And as soon as I made it, I was like, this is going to go well, right? It's like, no, I think we both hated our movies, but we'll talk about that.
The problem is that I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, sounds good. Like, so like
you have become very
so excited that she has an idea that I don't have to think of things. So then, but even at that one, I was like, I guess. Okay.
Sure. If you want to do a total trash idea, sure. Let's do it. Well, I do want to do trash. And so we're talking Can't Hardly Wait tonight. And that movie dropped in June of 1998. It got a raving review on Rotten Tomatoes of, and I quote, occasionally clever and moderately intelligent. Can't Hardly Wait also contains too many cheap laughs, recycled plotting, and flat characters, which is the nail on the fucking head of this movie for me. I could rest my case there, but we're going to do this anyway because who doesn't like, we're a little bit of a masochist here on 90 court, 90s court.
Just one, and just so, 190.
Just 190 court. By the way, the tomato meter rating is 41%, if that tells you anything.
No, that's not too terrible.
Yeah, I suppose not. The cast, though, is insanely full of people. Like, this is a massive cast. Ethan Embry is Preston Myers. You may not know the name. If you Google it, you'll know his face. He kind of looks like a little puppy dog. That's that guy from the 90s. Jennifer Love Hewitt, whom we all know. She played Amanda Beckett, the love interest of the film. Lauren Ambrose as Denise Fleming. Seth Green as Kenny Fisher. Peter Facinelli is Mike Dexter. I think it's Mike Dexter. My text got cut off, but whatever the case is, then a bunch of other people that nobody really knew, but then some random people were extras that were not really credited very strongly. So we've got Jamie Presley as Beth, Jenna Elfman as the angel stripper, and Jerry O'Connell as a random high school student that has moved on to college and is not doing so great. And then somehow unaccredited completely was like Melissa Joan Hart. She was in this film, and she actually had a kind of, I don't know if she's unaccredited. I could be wrong about that, but she was just yearbook girl, and that's not a big enough name for her for this film. But what we have here with Can't Hardly Wait is essentially the most stereotypical high school comedy in heavy quotes. Occasionally clever and moderately intelligent. It's about a long-held love for the popular girl in school with very little other plot and no redeemingly interesting characters, unfortunately. So this movie also had absolutely no business being over an hour and a half long. Absolutely unnecessary. When I started this, it doesn't burn anytime just getting into the meat and the potatoes of the movie. It just gets into it. It's just like, but why is this an hour and 40 minutes long? Why does it have to do this long?
We need to get into it so that way we can drag it at the end.
Drag so much ass, like a dog with a turd hanging out of its ass. That's what this movie was. Mm-hmm. So we start off at high school graduation, and Preston, played by Ethan Embry, finds out about this party tonight where Amanda Jennifer Love Hewitt will be. And of course, he's a little excited because he just found out that her boyfriend, Mike, broke up with her earlier today. Cool timing, Mike. So Preston is immediately panicking about how he's finally going to get his chance to be with Amanda. And he's spilling this all out to his friend Denise, played by Lauren Ambrose. And she's like, why though? She's kind of like the cool, slightly artsy fartsy kind of kid. And they're really good friends. He apparently wrote a letter to Amanda after he met her, explaining that he loved her and that they were meant to be together,
cool
but
letter.
That he never really had. Cool letter. Very cool letter. He never had the courage to deliver it to her. And so he starts daydreaming about the day he met Amanda at school. And this is how basic this connection was, okay? Also, he was, during this sequence, they cue Smash Mouth's Walking on the Sun.
The bands that were commonly used in soundtracks in the 90s for films is still, like, just unbelievable to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Blink-182 was on this as well. I mean, I would wager that the soundtrack
is better than this.
Yeah, but just, like, yeah. So the sequence is that he was just there the day that she transferred to the school, and of all the classes in the school, she was in his, and all the seats, she was next to him, and he's eating a Pop-Tart. Yeah, and guess what? Out of her backpack, she pulls the exact same strawberry Pop-Tart, topical, that he was eating, and he was just like, oh my God, fate! And then the teacher's like,
it is the most popular flavor of Pop-Tart.
Yeah,
yeah. It is the most commonly gotten flavor, but anyways.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But don't worry, it's fate. And so the teacher's like, who's going to show Amanda who's new at school around? And he's raising his hand to volunteer. But Mike, the jock / her new boyfriend, is like, I'll do it. And then he lost a chance forever. And then so for 4 years, freshman and a senior, he never told her how he felt. And she never knew who he was because they never got a chance to, even though they sat beside each other in class, she was just too popular and he was just whatever, you know, falls by the wayside. So we meet Mike, who's this real piece of shit jock guy who's just broken up with Amanda. We also meet the dorky guy who has it out for Mike. We meet, in my opinion, probably the star of this whole damn movie is Seth Green's character, Kenny Fisher, who is just like dying to get laid. Like this, you know, it's this whole thing he carries around
about. He wears like the Seth Green.
He plays the part of Seth Green, this small man with goggles on his head who's just trying to get laid and carries around a backpack of, like, sexual accoutrement and, like, he's like, I've got, like, you know, lubes and lotions and
sure.
Kama Sutra books. Like, who didn't have that in their backpack senior year of high school, honestly? So then we start the sequence of like a jillion people filtering into this rich kid's house for that party tonight. So we're already to it. That's just the whole rest of the movie is just happening now. Also, Clarissa, Melissa Joan Hart, yearbook girl, is here harassing people to get her to sign her yearbook. She wants to get everyone to sign it. That's her whole thing, this whole movie. So everybody's going about their pretty meaningless storyline. Then in comes Amanda to the party. And it's the most hilarious entrance. Amanda being Jennifer Love Hewitt. She comes in and everybody is staring at her. And she's just standing there quietly with like wind blowing her perfectly combed hair just a little bit. And she just looks a little sad but pretty. And it's just, it's annoyingly adorable. So then she's, you know, she's trying to avoid Mike, who she sees is there, her ex-boyfriend. So she's like, I'm just going to have a good time tonight. And we flash to Seth Green's character, which is, in my opinion, is the most interesting thing in this whole damn movie. He overhears a girl talking about how her boyfriend hurt her feelings and they broke up. And like, she's like, that's it. I'm sleeping with the next guy that talks to me. And so Kenny's like, and so she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he goes and talks to her and she's like, yeah, fine. And he's like, well, oh, meet me in this pool house. She's like, but then he realizes that, you know, this being his first time, he has to get all his stuff ready. So he's going to go get his like dick ready in the bathroom. I don't know.
What the fuck?
I don't know. And then he tries to go to the downstairs bathroom at the house party, but it's totally full. So the hostess is like, oh my gosh, just get out of my face. Go to the one upstairs. But as he's walking away, he doesn't hear her say, don't shut the door all the way. The door doesn't really work and you'll get locked in. So he goes in, doesn't hear that, shuts the door, he's locked in, but he doesn't know it yet. And he's too busy like digging around with his stuff in his backpack. And I think this is the sequence that most people would probably remember from this movie. So Seth Green like starts doing like a spread eagle move with like one foot on the kitchen or the bathroom counter, and then one other foot like across from him on the bathroom tub, and he's like gyrating in the air. It's like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. But he spills water on himself trying to blow dry it off, and that's when Denise, Preston's friend, walks in, and they're both like locked into the bathroom upstairs together where no one can hear them and they cannot get out. So the rest of the time at the party, Mike is trying to get his like group of guy friends to break up with their girls, like in a move of solidarity, because he was like, you know, I'm not gonna date Amanda anymore. But they're struggling because like their girls are hot. One of them being what's her name? What Presley?
Jamie Presley.
Yes, thank you. One of them being one of them. It's just like, yeah, you're not gonna break up with Jamie Presley, just straight up. So let's see where I'm in my notes. They don't want to break up with them. And his whole thing was like, he just assumed that going on to college, that he would suddenly just be like drowning in girls. And he didn't want Amanda to hold him back. And they're like, I don't know, like this girl wants to take me to go see, I don't remember, Guns N' Roses or something. I don't remember what the show was. But I don't want to spend too much time on this movie because genuinely there was so little substance that none of it mattered. But the next beefy thing that happens is that Denise and Kenny are up in the bathroom talking to each other. And, you know, we as the viewers learned that, like, they used to be friends growing up, but they kind of moved apart because she, you know, was I don't know. And, like, he tried to become cool and, like, didn't want to talk to her anymore. But that doesn't matter because they kiss and then they bang in the bathroom. And that's mm-hmm. weird. That escalated quickly. Mm-hmm. Didn't go well. Whatever the case is. At the same time, after Mike approaches Amanda at the party, he's like trying to get back together with her. She says no and starts yelling at him. And then all these guys from her class like start coming out of the woodwork to be like, hey, remember the time when blank? And they just say something totally gross. Like, remember one time we were like dancing that one time at that pool, you know, at this one party? Oh, I had the biggest boner. And I mean, or like trying to talk to her, they just start staring at her boobs and be like, you're so hot. And so she's getting totally annoyed at this point. And then at this point in the same time where she's just trying to get out of the party, but everyone's being gross to her, Preston finally gets the guts to tell her how he feels. And so he approaches her, but she doesn't know that. I failed to mention that earlier somewhere in the movie, that letter he wrote to her got like passed around the party somehow, like by sticking to people's feet. Like he threw it away. It made it back to in front of her. She found it. Okay. Yep. She found it. She read it, but she doesn't know who Preston is because she's a total bitch and never paid attention to him in school. And so here's Preston, the guy who wrote this letter that she's aware of now, telling her that he loves her. And she was just like, you know what? I've had it up to here, and totally roasts him in front of the entire school, even though she doesn't know who this guy is.
Jesus.
And he's heartbroken, and he leaves the party, okay? And so he goes to this, like, phone booth situation. There's a whole Barry Manilow situation. We don't need to talk about that. But then, what's her name? Not Jenna Fisher. Jenna Elfman. Mm. She is dressed as an angel stripper, and she talks to him at the park, or, you know, this parking lot. And she's like, it's okay, bro. And he's heartbroken. And the whole rest of the night, Amanda's like going around the party, trying to figure out who Preston is, but no one can describe him very well. And so she's just like totally put off. Anyway, the party ends. The next morning, Denise and Preston are at this cafe, and he's learning all about how Denise and Kenny banged in the bathroom, and she's like, I guess we're a thing now. LOL, that's weird. And he's like, well, okay. Well, I told Amanda how I felt, but she yelled at me, so I'm going to go to college now. It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the train station. He's got all this stuff, and he's going to head off to college now. So I want to stop for a second, because this to me was a weird thing. Who takes the train to go to college? And I'm not talking like, I'm talking like train. Who takes the train?
You mean like to go to college? Like to go to a day of class or to actually go to college? Like this
to
like,
move away I'm to moving college. Away.
Wow. No, I, yeah, that's wild.
And then second, he was at the train station alone. How unloved by your parents do you have to be that they're like, just, we'll see you. You just go, you can leave the train station alone. It's fine. I don't know why that sat with me the wrong way, but I was like, this nobody loves this fucking kid. So anyway, he's heading to board the train when Amanda shows up out of nowhere and shows him the letter and is like, hey, you dropped this. And for a moment, I think that he's going to, because I couldn't remember how this movie ended. I was just like, no, he's going to skip going to college to stay here for Amanda. And I'm like, no, dude, no, like screaming at my laptop. And she's just like, thank you for the letter, you know, and they have a little exchange, and you can tell that she's a little disappointed that he's going away to college, even though she's never given him the time of day prior to this moment. But they kiss, they have this moment, but mercifully,
I'm sorry, what?
They kiss. I don't know, Andy. This movie sucked.
She knows nothing about this person except that he wrote a letter about her.
But she just is just like, after all this time with Mike and all these other asshole dudes in school, the fact that you felt this way, then it must be love. And because that's how, you know, 16-year-old brain works.
Yeah.
But mercifully, he does go to college per like the you know, notes at the end of the movie. But they do long distance dating, and she wrote him letters every single day while he was in college. The end. Let us never speak of this horrible movie again. Even going through the trivia, oof, I could not find anything that was interesting to share. I was just like, this movie sucked. I wanted to find something good. There wasn't. The acting was mediocre. The casting, there were a lot of big actors. There was, it's not Seth Rogen, but one of the actors from his like original crew, the taller, darker haired one. He was in this film. Like, was it Jerry O'Connell? Like, I mean, there's some random big people in this film. And I'm just like, what is happening? And it was the I can't remember the actor from Clueless, the one that dated Stacey. Boy, I cannot think of any names right now. But anyway, it's just a huge cast. Huge. Everyone who was like a sort of somebody was in this film, it felt like. And it still sucked. So that's Can't Hardly Wait.
It didn't
wait.
Save it. It still was
did
bad.
Not, there were no redeeming qualities. None whatsoever. I would not recommend going back and watching this one.
Oh, Jason Segel. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Thank you, Jason Segel. Thank you so much. So that's Can't Hardly Wait. And now I can't hardly wait to never talk about this again and listen to you talk about She's All That.
Awesome. Bada bing, bada boom. Lisa, so this is, I was thinking, I was like, oh, I better like ask her to like edit this out, but this is actually hilarious and insane. So while Lisa was sharing and talking about that, obviously I'm on a laptop when we're recording this, and I have a mouse, and obviously I have a touchpad. And as I'm sitting here, just like imagine like at like a million miles per hour, your like cursor is just going everywhere around the screen and it's just clicking on things and highlighting stuff and like shrinking in and out. Like, I have no idea what's happening. It was like a ghost had taken over my computer and I'm trying to wrangle it. And currently, I have my hand on the touchpad while I'm moving the mouse around, and that's the only way that I'm able to control anything, because I was like trying to wrangle my own mouse cursor while you were talking. So I was like, "Whoa, boy!"
The movie was so bad that it haunted your laptop.
I'm mildly terrified because I don't know what is wrong with my computer. But she's all that.
She's all bad. Let's figure this shit out.
January 19th, 1999. Getting it started with a bang. Budget, $7 to $10 million. Box office, $103.2 million. That's how you make money. Poorly made film at a shitty high school with some bad actors.
I love it.
There's some famous people that were in this, obviously. You got Freddie Prinze Jr., Rachel Lee Cook, Paul Walker, R.I.P. Matthew Lillard. Matthew Lillard is he's the one. He plays a character in this, and I'll just tell you ahead of time. So when I mention him, because I like when I did this, I was just not remembering characters' names, so I was just like this guy. He played a guy who was, I guess, on like the Real World at the time. And
interesting.
And so like a girlfriend. Well, let me just tell you about the movie.
Okay.
So anyways, movie starts out. We're focusing on this girl, Lainey, who seems like she's an artistic person with a little bit of a unibrow and glasses. But she seems like she's pretty mature and she's pretty grown up, and she kind of helps her brother. Just immediately like, oh, well, we're at school now. And then now we're zooming in on this guy named Zach, who's like clearly the super popular guy. Like, everybody wants him. Everybody loves him. Everybody thinks he's great. And it's like everybody worships the ground he walks on. But he doesn't seem to be like a huge dick. He just seems to be just overly popular.
Okay.
So then he's just going through this whole sequence of him just encountering all these different characters. Just like, let's briefly let you be acquainted with the fact that these characters exist. Now he's with his girlfriend, Taylor. And she's just like, I'm breaking up with you. And he's like, oh. And then they sit down and like she just explains to him in just very vivid detail how she was just on spring break and then met this guy, Matthew Lillard, who was from the Real World, and they just boned like crazy. And I'm like, why would he just sit and listen to this whole story? I'd be like, why are you telling me this information? Like, if you're breaking up with me, just walk away. You don't have to tell me like exactly in detail why. And he's an idiot. So he's also the guy she's dating is an idiot, but apparently like, this girl Taylor also sucked. We kind of quickly bop in on the artistic girl who like has been spending all this time making art, and apparently her teacher's like, you have no emotion. This is fucking garbage.
Nice. Very good.
And from what I could tell, it was a beautiful piece of art with like a lot of work put into it, but it was just kind of like, it was more of like a political piece rather than like an emotional piece. And so she's like, you're really bad and you're doing a bad job.
You should feel bad.
Yeah. And it's just like, here's just a quick thing of like being like, oh, she's not very emotional and she is not very good with art. Immediately afterward, popular guy who got broken up with, Zach, says he can make any girl the hottest chick in school. So clearly this is like some pretty like developed high level drama that we've got going on here.
Yes.
And so his friend who is, let me see, what was his name in the movie? Who was played by Paul Walker, Dean, basically he says like, I'll make anybody the hottest girl in school. And then Dean they're like looking at all these different girls or whatever. And then he picks, it's like, I'll pick her. And then, and of course, he acts like, no, anything but her. No. This extremely gorgeous person who happens to be wearing glasses and have a few stray hairs betwixt her eyebrows. And she's pretty antisocial or whatever. So anyway, so he basically immediately, it's just like, because, I mean, think about it. It's like 10 Things I Hate About You-esque. Except it's a bad movie. It's like like My Fair Lady-esque, except it's a bad movie. They're just like, he immediately goes up to her and he's like, oh, hey, Lainey. And then she's like, I gotta go. And so he's just like, well, I thought everybody loved me, but apparently I'm a piece of shit. And so we get to know that he apparently has some like self-esteem issues too, which is weird. But I get it. I'm glad it made him at least humanizing him a little bit. So then he's just very persistent, like not in like in the movie, it makes it seem like he's just fucking like constantly. And she's like, will you leave me alone? Like, this is insane. But probably there's a little bit more time that passes between these events, but he goes to her work and tries to get a hold of her and just like, hey, I wanted to talk to you about, art. And she's like, oh, because I think it's mainly because like she recently like had her feelings hurt about art. And so she's like, oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess. And so I recently had my feelings hurt about art. Let's talk about art. So everybody, there's always like another character that's around her who is just like, why are you not talking to this guy? Like, cause she just doesn't seem impressed or interested in talking to him at all. And like every person that is around him is like, this is the fucking coolest dude in the world. Fucking talk to him. But she just is, and I think that's kind of why he's super into it too, is because she's hard to get. So they go to this weird art show and like she's in this art and doing like some weird stage art that is clearly intentionally like confusing and bad. And so then they're like, and we have a new person here visiting us today, which is of course what happens when you go to art theaters. They're like, and we're going to have him. You want to come up and perform? They're like, what? Why would he come up and perform?
Why not, man?
So he
why
goes up
not?
And does this like, he's like doing hacky sack. And he ends up during the course of it making like a very deep, like almost like commentary on like the fact that like you can't fail, you can't he's like, as he's doing the hack, he's like, don't let it drop, don't let it drop. And it's like,
oh, that's right.
Yeah. So it's ended up being this like thing that was kind of deep in the sense that it was kind of like, yeah, man, like you just got to keep up this facade all the time. And so people kind of like were like, yeah, vibe, man. And so afterwards that he's actually like, wow, that was actually really cool. Like, you know, I did this thing and it was pretty, pretty opening. And she's like, yeah, you're great. And this is great. And then he's like, do you ever wear contacts? And she's like, no. And he's like, well, you really should sometime because your eyes are very pretty. And then she just loses her shit. She's like, fuck you.
Hey, you go to hell for telling me that I'm pretty.
Fuck, what was I thinking? And she leaves. And there's not really any context as to why. She's just like, well, fuck this. So, of course, he keeps being needy. Coming to her house and eventually, and I guess she's just like, all right, fine. I'll go to the beach with you. It just feels like this person like just the cops should be called on him for how incessant he is on just showing up to her door.
Right.
He does tell her she should smile more, which is super cool and awesome. and they do also say,
women love that.
Yeah. And they do also say, wow, from a distance, she almost looks normal. So like, generally speaking, this was like a pretty woke film. So,
a little too woke.
Yeah. So
there's
like some decently problematic things throughout the film. So anyways, after the beach, they invite her to this party and she says no, and tells them she has to clean. So she goes home. And she wasn't wanting to clean. She just didn't want to go to this fucking party. And so he literally just comes to her house
again,
brings the JV soccer team with him because he controls humans. And it's just like, you're coming. These people are going to clean for you. And so like, as she went, so the JV soccer team comes in, starts cleaning up the house while her dad is just in there, like watching Jeopardy. And then his sister takes her upstairs and they do the, like, she's all that treatment, which is, I've heard that expression used before because that is literally named after this movie, of course. And so they should go upstairs and they're like, hey, we're going to pluck some eyebrows. And somehow, I don't remember if they gave her contacts or what, which would be weird for them to just have her prescription like ready to go in contacts. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden they're like, well, you don't have glasses anymore. Now you're very attractive because of course she is.
That's how that works.
Because
no,
literally,
glasses, it was so hot.
Yeah. I mean, it was just literally like, oh, she just had a few hairs between her eyes and glasses. So anyways, they're at the party that they went to, various characters we've met there. Everyone's being weird as fuck. I mean, the plot really gets lost when the real world guy is just there and dancing. And there's this whole like just sequence of people watching this guy dance. And then the guy's ex sees Lainey and basically is like, what the fuck are you doing here? Because she's like, I'm a cool person. You're not cool and you shouldn't be at this party because for some reason I care. And then she just spills wine on her and tells her she's not cool, basically. And like, you would think like, wow, these were really bad disses and a poor thing. But instead, Lainey just starts crying.
Wow. I forgot about
this,
man.
I'm like, why did she cry? Like, I'm like, I mean, like, you couldn't hold it together. Like, it's just like the opposite. It's like when you do something mean to someone, what you want to happen, but never actually does because that's insane, was probably based on this movie. They're like, if you just say something kind of mean and spill a drink on them, they'll cry.
It happens every time.
Yep.
Every time.
So evidently when everyone after that was just like, fucking yeah, Lainey. So everybody at school all of a sudden is like, Lainey fucking rules. She should be prom queen. Just like out of nowhere, they're just suddenly like, hey, she should be prom queen. Fuck Taylor. Now, Zach is kind of having a spiral because Zach, like, the reason he had this whole thing with Lainey was because he was under the impression that, like, I think he's kind of afraid that, like, he's not going to be as cool, like, because everybody's insinuating that he wasn't going to be as cool now that he's not with Taylor. And so his life's kind of spiraling a little bit because suddenly a lot of his friends don't respect him as much, and he's kind of getting brought down to, like, normal human size. So anyways, he goes to see Lainey at the house because, of course, he shows up at her house constantly and just never knocks. There's some back and forth about their futures and stuff. And then Zach leans in to kiss her. And then she interrupts. She's like, are you just doing this to get my vote for prom king? And then he just kind of like just like backs up and is like, OK, you know what? I'm going to go and just leaves. Because honestly, that was a fucked up thing. to ask, like, in the middle of that.
Right.
So basically he bails and has an existential crisis, has a weird dream sequence. They have a few dream sequences in here where one of his dream sequences is he's on the real world where Lainey and Taylor are basically talking about how the fact that they made him cool and he's a joke and he's like, nobody actually likes him. But the next day, Zach in the cafeteria sticks up for Lainey's little brother in the lunchroom in a very public manner. And so Lainey's like, okay, maybe he's not so bad.
Maybe.
But introduce bad guy. So Dean Sampson, the person who made the bet to begin with Zach, who really hasn't had much of a part in this movie for the most part, is like, all of a sudden is like, I want to bone Rachel Lee Cook. And so he is suddenly trying to hit on Lainey. And basically he, like, Lainey's not interested, but then he, like, just, like, says some shitty things about, like, that Zach said about him. It's like, oh, he's into Taylor or something like that. And now that she's alone, like, he's going to go back with her. And, of course, she's like, oh, well, it must be true. And then later, Zach is encountered by Taylor, and Zach's like, no, Taylor, fuck you. You're a piece of shit. I'm with Lainey now. And then he looked, and she's like, well, apparently she doesn't get the note. And so she's talking to Dean. And so he walks over, is like, what the fuck are you doing, Dean? And then he's like, hey,
what
relax,
are you guys
man.
Doing?
He says, what are you guys even doing? And they're like, we're literally standing just in a public room next to each other, like, and I'm talking to her. So Dean, just in a way to embarrass Zach, immediately brings up the bet between them in front of Lainey. And so naturally, in a very fair reaction, she is devastated because that's fucked up. To be
so
like,
fucked up.
Oh, the reason that you were so persistently chasing me was not because you were so into me. It was because you were trying to win a bet. So Dean and Taylor both have these like shit eating smiles on their face because Dean's like, good, now I'm going to fuck Lainey. And Taylor's like, good, now I'm going to fuck Zach. And Taylor is even like, all right, bitch boy, you're coming back with me. He's like, okay.
Wow.
He didn't end up actually doing that. She thought he was, but Zach's like, no, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. And so Zach ends up going to prom with his sister. Not in a weird way. They're just going because neither of them really had dates, so they were just going quote unquote together, like, you know, they walked in together.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Dean is trying to play the good modest shy guy, but clearly he's acting. But Lainey went to prom with him because he was acting like, oh, I mean, it would just be really cool if you come, even though Dean is clearly the biggest dick in the world in this movie. Then, cue
then
Rockefeller Skank by Fatboy Slim, which if you're not familiar with that term, that's because you probably think of it as the Funk Soul Brother. That song, the right about now.
I kid you, I shit you not,
3.5 to 4 minutes of just synchronized dance work of just the DJ playing this song and like everybody in the fucking dance just dancing to this and like in synchronicity and everything like that. And there was no plot development from it. Nothing happened. You just sat and watched this dance thing at this high school prom for several minutes. And then finally they end. And the art teacher randomly is at prom.
Yes.
An art teacher walks up to Lainey and is like, hey, that painting you did of your mom recently? Because her mom had passed away. That was a notable thing. And so he's like, that thing you did of your mom was rad as fuck. And I told a bunch of colleges about that in a letter about how great your work is. This was genuinely the best piece of work you did all year. Whatever inspired you to do that, don't let go. Whatever's inspired this new side of you, don't let it go. And so she looks off wistfully because she's like, Zach's inspired that part of me. But apparently that didn't mean much because then we see Dean in the bathroom confessing that he's been acting and trying to bone Lainey. And one of Lainey's friends is in a stall, of course, because that's the best way that anything works. He's in the stall and overhears this, that he's trying to sleep with her. And then they announce the prom king and Zach wins. Congratulations, Zach. Good for you.
Yay.
And then they announce prom queen, which was between Taylor and Lainey, and Taylor wins. Womp womp. 54 to 46. So the bad person won. So Lainey is obviously super heartbroken. Meanwhile, Lainey's friend at the exact time is rushing to try and get to her to tell her, like, hey, he's just trying to fuck you and he's a piece of shit. But of course, the timing is the worst. And so she's like, man, that sucks. And Dean's like, man, you should have won. Anyways, you want to get out of here? And she's like, yeah, let's go. And so they're like walking out the door. And so Lainey's friend ends up telling Zach, hey, she's trying to bone. Anyways, so Zach goes chasing after her. I kind of lost the plot for a second because all of a sudden they're back at her house and she's coming home and there wasn't any discussion of like where her and Dean went. Apparently she had blown an air horn whenever he tried to get fresh with her. And then like she deafened him and then just ran away. That's
hell yeah.
Generally speaking, what I gleaned from what happened is that apparently wasn't happened. And they're like, we don't need to show that scene. We'll just skip it.
We'll just describe it.
It was just insane that was what they skipped to. And then all of a sudden she gets home and Zach's already at her house and is like trying to like confess, you know, how much he likes her and everything like that. And so it ends up that they're fans of each other. They're pretty fond and they end up together. And then she's like, man, it's too bad you lost that bet. What did you wager, by the way? And then we cut to the graduation, which is where Zach has to walk across the stage naked because he lost the bet because she didn't win prom. Even though he did say the hottest girl in the school, not prom queen, but apparently that was the bet. And so he lost, so he had to walk across the stage naked at graduation. That was the end of the movie.
Oh, boy. These damn are we almost done with teen movies? Anyways,
hopefully not. So let me give you a little bit of so I realized at the end of the movie that I was like, I thought I'd seen something like this. And I realized when I was reading through the notes that this was largely that the Not Another Teen Movie was largely based on this movie. Like, it was based on a lot of movies, but this was kind of like the main plot of it was Not Another Teen Movie, which I did see that movie. And of the like scary movie type, like blank movie or whatever, that one was actually pretty good. I liked Not Another Teen Movie and definitely more than this. So
if you get
a chance, that was a decent movie. Trivia. Filmed at the same high school as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 1997. Sarah Michelle Gellar, who plays Buffy in the series and who co-starred with Freddie Prinze Jr. in I Know What You Did Last Summer, has a small non-speaking cameo. The same high school was also used in another teen movie, which again, apparently they just 2 years later made a spoof of this and just had it in the exact same place. And then later, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. got married. See, I kind of lost the plot on that thing. Apparently, this was the number one fact, and I couldn't even follow the entire thread of what it was saying.
Wow.
But it was at the same high school of a bunch of places. So I learned this. The prom dancing sequence that I mentioned earlier originally was not scripted in the movie and wasn't going to be filmed. It was later added. It was added in at the last minute because they needed it to go an extra few minutes. My question to you is this. why did it need to be 97 minutes? That seems like an unusual time to need it to be. But
exactly.
Whatever. Let me see. There was apparently a claim, M. Night Shyamalan claimed that he had ghostwritten the script. The actual director, the writer was like, no, fuck that. That didn't happen. But somebody later on, the director did confirm that he did have like a few parts in it. I was just like, wouldn't that be hilarious if M. Night Shyamalan's just like, yeah, I totally was in on She's All That. Like, why would anyone want credit for this film?
Why would you claim that on purpose? You don't have to do this. You know that, right?
You could just say nothing and no one would think, hey, I wonder if M. Night Shyamalan got in on this. Anyways, Rachel Lee Cook's character's name, Lainey Boggs, is a combination of the names of two characters played by Winona Ryder, Kim Boggs in Edward Scissorhands and Leilena Lainey Pierce in Reality Bites. And apparently this is a nod to the fact that Cook and Ryder have similar physical appearance. I don't know.
Okay.
She's All That, of course, is an adaptation of the stage play Pygmalion. And like I said, My Fair Lady is also kind of in there a little bit too. And then
a little bit, yeah.
And then I wanted to mention at the last part, this isn't really trivia, but the character of Simon Boggs, who is played by Kieran Culkin, who is the little brother of Rachel Lee Cook, wears dual hearing aids. And I just wanted to mention that because I'm always like, oh, I just always think it's interesting whenever they do that. It's kind of nice that they do that. Cause I know, our friend Mary had mentioned that she like is always like, it's just nice to see characters with them, like as for, you know, children and everything like that, to be like, hey, look, like there's a person on the screen that you know, that has the same thing that you have. And so I just thought that was really nice that they included that. And it wasn't even like they didn't have to mention it or have like any backstory. They're just like, this is a person that has those. So
yeah, just happens sometimes. Can you imagine?
Yeah, hard to believe. Yeah. So anyway, so She's All That.
She's all done.
She's all done.
Can't wait
for
this to be all
I'm excited to turn off my ghost computer. Anyways.
Yes, I will take us out since yours is having trouble. How about that? thank you guys for listening to the show, Can't Hardly Wait versus She's All That. If you want to vote and participate in all that, we are on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, Instagram at 90s.court. We have a Patreon as well if you'd like to get some shout outs and some occasional content. But we love you so much. Just the Patreon, patreon.com/90sCourt. Check out our merch store at teepublic.com/user/the90sCourt. And as always, if you would be so kind, we would love a 5-star review on iTunes, Podchaser, Podmaster, Buckmaster Sandwich.
Buckmaster Sandwich is one of the more popular ones. So if you could really hop on that, that'd be great. We really need.
We don't have a lot of reviews on there somehow.
Nobody's gotten on there.
No one.
Yeah, well, awesome. Well, thank you so much. I don't have any parting remarks. Do you?
No, let's get the hell out of here. Let's never speak of these movies again.
Never speak of it again. We'll bury it and never speak again. Anyways, everybody out there, stay rad.
Bye.
Bye.